in 2011. The state created a school reform district called the Education Achievement Authority, or EAA, to turn around the state's lowest-ranking schools. In its first year in operation during the 2012-13 school year, the EAA took control of 15 priority schools in Detroit. The results have been mixed at best, as the EAA has been plagued with declining enrollment, insufficient funding, and accusations of ineffectiveness and unsafe conditions. Currently, a bill at the Capitol proposes to expand the EAA to cover failing schools across the state. It's struggling to get enough support from both Democrats and Republicans, however, and joining us to discuss their opposition to EAA expansion are State Representative Brandon Dillon, a Democrat from Grand Rapids, along with Brooke Harris. Brooke was a former 10th grade English teacher at Mumford High School in Detroit, one of the EAA schools. Representative Dillon, Brooke Harris, welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Good morning.
Good morning. Brandon Dillon, your House colleague Ellen Kogan Lipton referred to the EAA as a fiasco. Is she right?
I think so, and I don't think there's any other legislator who knows as much about the EAA as Representative Lipton. She's done enormous work to try to get to the bottom of what's going on in those 15 schools. She paid $2,600 out of her own pocket to do a FOIA request to really start digging into some of the documents that the EAA was unwilling to release, and you know, everything that's been going on in the last year and a half points to this. You said the results are mixed at best, and I think that's generous. I think fiasco is a better word, as Representative Lipton said.
Let's go a little bit deeper into why it isn't working. There have been accusations of a lack of transparency. I think it's been well publicized that the enrollment in the EAA declined pretty dramatically between the first year and the second year. There's allusions to administrative chaos. Tell us more. Which of these various concerns are you most concerned about?
Well, I think taken together, they're all very concerning. But, you know, I would think the lack of transparency as a public institution, which our public schools are, whether they're under the control of the EAA or they're a charter school or a traditional public school, they all receive tax dollars from residents in the state of Michigan. And that comes with it certain responsibilities to be transparent and let people know what's going on in those schools. And it has been like pulling teeth, to say the least, to get any information out of the EAA. The information we do get is usually from teachers, students, and parents who are unwilling to, in most cases, put their name out there for fear of retribution. We haven't seen any real progress in terms of test scores. In fact, test scores will be coming out in March, and that's one of the reasons we think they're pushing so hard to get this passed before that's done. And then you see, you know, parents and students voting with their feet. They're leaving the school in the thousands. It's a real problem, and I think all of the issues taken together show that this is not something that should be taken statewide at all. It's probably something we should reexamine whether or not it's even working in the city of Detroit in those 15 schools.
Brooke Harris, I'd like to ask you a few questions. You taught 10th grade English at Mumford High School in the EAA's first year. That was the 2012-2013 school year. What was that like?
Fiasco was too light of a word. It was mass chaos, and it was so disheartening to just watch the slow decline and just like everyone realize what was actually going on in those schools, and it wasn't learning.
Tell us about the buzz system. Apparently the buzz system was quite an issue. What was that?
Buzz is the online curriculum, and I use that phrase very loosely, that students were supposed to use, and it wasn't up and running until well into October of last school year. And when it was running, I decided to take a look at one of the English lessons, and it was an introductory lesson to the novel The House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros. And that's a novel that's usually taught in the middle school, but that's what they loaded into the 10th grade curriculum. Mind you, I didn't have any copies of this novel, so it was in the curriculum that I was supposed to teach this novel, but there were no copies available at all in the district, let alone in Mumford.
How did the video teach a novel?
It opened up with an animated sequence. It reminded me a lot of like a PBS kids show that my niece, who's two, would watch. It was called Word Up. It would do a little cartoon introduction to the lesson, to the novel. And then the professor would come on screen. And the professor was a middle-aged Caucasian man, looked like he could have been a professor. I assume he's probably a paid actor. And then he would give a lecture, kind of a college-style or traditional teaching-style lecture that we as teachers were told not to do, but that's what the children were watching on the screen, about the background to the novel. And the background to the novel was about racial inequalities and underfunded schools. So, like, in a sad twist of horrible irony, there was this middle-aged white man lecturing my black students in Detroit about racial inequalities and underfunded schools.
Well, it sounds like a conversation you could have pursued given Detroit's challenges. How did the students engage with that?
I never actually showed it, and that is one of the reasons why I am the former teacher in the EAA, is I never used Buzz. I thought it was condescending and offensive. I did show that lesson to a group of community members, one of whom was a parent of a student at Mumford, and she found me after that presentation and told me that she cried when she saw what the EAA thought her student was intellectually capable of. It made her cry. She wept that is what I was supposed to be teaching in my class, but I refused to do.
So it was just a presentation, and it was a presentation that was geared to much younger people.
Yes.
Okay. What were the students saying?
They knew what was going on. They knew that they were experiment, and that word came out of several of their mouths, that we're being experimented on, whether it was with the online Buzz curriculum or the fact that so many of their teachers were in their first year from TFA, and they knew that. They would come to me and say, you know, can you help me with this? My teacher doesn't know how to teach it. She just told me to Google it online. And they were very frustrated and very disenfranchised by the entire situation and tried so much to do so much so many times, but they just kept getting shut down, myself included, by administration.
We're talking about the issue of potentially expanding the Education Achievement Authority here in the state of Michigan with the two opponents of that move, State Representative Brandon Dillon and a former teacher in Detroit's EAA district, Brooke Harris. Brandon Dillon, how do supporters of expanding the EAA justify their support when you bring your concerns up?
You know, that's a great question. I think for a long time, when the bills were originally introduced last session, the argument was, well, we have to do something. What was going on before wasn't working, so let's do this. And, you know, that's a really dangerous way to make public policy. It's kind of a shoot from the hip. Let's do this idea that we think is going to work without any data or science behind it. You have this teaching model, as Ms. Harris just pointed out, that is not inclined to serve kids well. You know, this has been the argument is basically just based on, you know, we've come up with this idea. It's different than what we did before, so let's do it. And, you know, I think most people are willing to, you know, I wouldn't say experiment, but try alternative methods for education. But as long as they're based on some research and science and data, these kids are too important to be able to put into some experiment where you have people who really don't know what they're doing trying to impact the lives of these kids. So that's basically been the argument. I haven't heard a real argument based on data or that this is a proven method of improving student achievement. It's mainly been on, and I think now Republicans in the House are just so vested in this, and the governor really wants to make sure that he can show that he's done something, that they're willing to pass this expansion bill, even if they know that what's going on in the 15 schools already is not up to snuff.
Brooke, is there anything in the EAA program that you thought worked?
No.
Well, how did families tend to respond? There are still families with children in this district. I take it some number of them must believe in it. Have you met with parents who say, yeah, this is an improvement?
I haven't, personally. And I know a lot of parents that I still am in contact with that still have their students in the schools is because they have no other option. So many, especially at the high school level, so many of Detroit's high schools have been shut down that Mumford is the only neighborhood school that isn't an application school that those students can go to. So it isn't necessarily, oh, like, Mumford's a good school. It's, I don't have a car, we don't have buses, this is the school that my child can walk to. I have no other options.
If parents wanted to attend an EAA board meeting, did that happen? Was that possible?
No, because all of EAA board meetings, which are quarterly instead of monthly like every other school district that I know of, are always held at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They're sometimes, very rarely, held in Detroit. I've attended one in Ypsilanti before on Eastern's campus, and they also have them in Lansing. So if you're a normal working person, there's no way to get there, especially when they're not held in the city. Even as a staff member, if I had concerns, I had to take a day off of work, which is counterproductive. So I have to leave my students with a sub in order to talk to the board. And that, I think, kind of goes towards that lack of transparency. I think that's by design, that they're held in the middle of the day in cities unaccessible to our parents.
And Brandon Dillon, when this transparency issue comes up with the supporters, again, do they have much of a response?
No, I haven't heard a good one. You know, the fact that a sitting state representative who's on the education committee had to pay fork over $2,600 to get documents from the school or from the authority, you know, I think speaks volumes about what's going on there. It suggests certainly that they're unwilling to release information, and when they are, they want to make it so difficult for people that they pretty much guarantee people who don't have the means to pay that kind of money aren't going to know what's going on. Holding school board meetings in the middle of the day on a quarterly basis is obviously a way to make sure that you have the least attendance possible. You know, if this was such a sterling idea, if this was such a great model that we should be taking out to districts in the UP and West Michigan and Mid-Michigan and all points in between, then they should be opening up the doors so people can see this great model they have. The opposite is true. They're doing things behind closed doors, and there's a reason for it. We may not know exactly what it is, but it certainly doesn't seem right.
Brandon, do you expect the expansion measure to proceed without hearings?
Yeah, they've shown no intention since the bill passed the Senate and came back to the House. They're looking to get the votes on the floor to be able to send this to the governor's desk as quickly as possible. You know, this has become more of a political document than a policy document. They're, you know, making education policy by trying to figure out what they need to do to get votes from certain members that have nothing to do with the quality of education in the EAA or what the quality of education will look like when the EAA expands to their district. This has become horse trading and trying to figure out the path of least resistance, and something this important that basically constitutes a state takeover of schools all across the state should be done in the light of day. Unfortunately, the lack of transparency at the EAA seems to be infiltrating itself back into the legislature.
Brooke, where are you teaching now? What are you doing now?
I'm at a charter school still in Detroit teaching high school English.
And how does that experience compare with the EAA?
We're reading To Kill a Mockingbird, and I have class novels, and it's glorious.
Brandon Dillon, explain what your measure, you have measures that you've teamed up with Representative Lipton with. What would those two measures do?
Yeah, this is when people say there is no alternative to the AAA, that's just flat out wrong. Representative Lipton and I co-chaired a task force last summer that went all across the state, from Marquette to Detroit to Ann Arbor, Grand Rapids. We went out and enlisted the help of educators, professionals in education, parents, community leaders, to talk about what we can do to help struggling schools. That's actually something that's going to achieve lasting results. And through that process, we came up with a lot of recommendations, but two main bills. One is Representative Lipton's bills, which would, for schools that are struggling, would have a locally based solution where we would provide support from the state to go in and really drill down and do a comprehensive audit of the problems in that school and produce a turnaround plan that's done locally under the supervision of the Department of Education that would be specific to that building and specific to that kids. This kind of one-size-fits-all education approach that the governor and House Republicans have isn't working. Also, we have a bill that would actually, for the first time, measure what it really costs to educate a child in the state of Michigan, not just the number we have on a dartboard based upon what the per pupil allowance is. So we've got some really good bills. We're excited. We'd love to get a hearing because we think if we do, there'll be even a lot of Republicans that will say this is a much better model.
Well, this is interesting, though, because Senate Majority Leader Richardville was on WKAR earlier this morning, and he claimed that the number of pro-expansion votes, he suggested that the number of pro-expansion votes is growing and is getting closer to the number necessary to pass. Is support growing from your perspective?
Well, he would probably have more insight onto what's going on behind the scenes because, again, those are conversations that are happening behind closed doors that, unfortunately, people like Representative Lipton and I and others that have concerns about the EAA aren't privy to. But I would be really, I think it's possible. They have a lot invested in this to make sure that it does succeed. But I will tell you, this is a very dangerous bill that will basically ensure that school districts across the state have their schools taken over by an entity that's results, as Ms. Harris said, is math chaos. This is a bad idea that's only getting worse the more we know about it, and I would hope that cooler heads would prevail in the House and we wouldn't proceed with this experiment.
I'll point out to our listeners that current state has extended invitations both to EAA Chancellor John Covington and to Lisa Postumus Lyons, the chair of the House Education Committee. We are hoping that they will take us up on our offer so we can get their perspective on this very important story. For now, we want to thank State Representative Brandon Dillon, the Grand Rapids Democrat, and Brooke Harris, a former 10th grade English teacher at Mumford High School in Detroit, one of the EAA schools. Thanks to both of you. Good luck.
Thank you.